You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
People are afraid. They are very much afraid of the changes that are occurring. The political situation in the United States, for one thing, would be creating a lot of fear. And I had like a woman that came on, and she said to me, she said, "I'm really frightened. I'm so frightened. I'm not frightened for myself. I'm frightened for my daughter. She's 7 years old, and I don't know what kind of world she's living in or what she's going to be living in." So these touching, fearful comments came out. So the way I would look at fear is this. It's like, if you're feeling fearful, just look at it. You can begin to reduce the intensity of that and take it step by step. It isn't that we can just eliminate our fears, but we can make them easier to get our arms around and deal with. And you can do that by trying to take some of the emotional charge and energy down a notch or two as you go when fear comes up. There's a term, a little phrase, sometimes people like little mantra-type phrases, and there's one that can be very effective for that, and it's this, Nicole: take the significance out. So when something comes up and it causes this big rise in fear, just try to say, take the significance out. And just, you're not ignoring it. You're not disavowing that it exists, but you're just reducing the intensity of the fearful response on so that you can better manage it, better make peace with things. And again, get your arms around it a little bit.
So you alluded to current times briefly earlier as you were speaking and how it is critical that we be functioning at a different level right now. Can you speak more to that?
Yeah, I'd be glad to, really. I think, Nicole, what we're going through right now is unprecedented. I don't think ever before in the history of humankind have we been going through as much change in a short amount of time as we are now. And the way that I sometimes characterize what's happening is that we're going through a dimensional shift in consciousness. In this context, when I use the term dimension, I'm not talking about a physical dimension. I'm talking about the ranges of parameters in which we operate and think and feel and create our reality. And we've been in a third-dimensional baseline reality for a long time. And that's not bad. Everything is okay. But it's a reality ruled by duality, separation, good, bad, right and wrong, and nationalities, all these different things. And it's a dimension that's produced a lot of magnificent things in the world. The world we have today is a result of that, and it's certainly a wonderful world. But it's also, of course, created a lot of problems. So we're making a major shift in dimensional jump now, moving from the third dimension all the way to the upper ranges of the fourth dimension. And that's a huge shift. Never before has that happened. And so when that much change is happening, it creates both chaos and order and coherence. It's hard. People have a hard time with change. You know, it's hard to adapt to so much change. So as a result of that, there's a couple things going on. One is that people are suffering. People are going through more challenges than they ever imagined. The world itself is under a lot of stress and strain. And all that's real. And that's what we see every day on the news. At the same time, there's an amazing consciousness movement unfolding as well. We are changing. We are evolving. We are developing new capacities as human beings. We are developing the ability to come up with solutions to challenges that often seem like there are no solutions. We are coming together more as people. There's a spirit in the air of cooperation instead of competition. There are movements happening all over the world. There are shows like this one, like yours, that are spreading new information, that are bringing people together, that are offering new insights that we all draw from. And as a result of that, we are co-creating a new reality. It's going to be a time period for a while, I believe, where we've still got a lot of challenges to face. But Nicole, my true feeling is that we are moving into something new and different that we've never seen before, and that although it looks dire at times, that we're headed in the right direction. So if we're in the middle of all this, as I said, we're going to need tools. We can't just approach life the same way we always approached it, try to solve problems in the same way in which we solved them before. It's all changing too fast. We have to have a new capacity in order to do this and have it be as smooth and kind of process as it can be.
And we are live on newsforthesoul.com. Today, I am talking to Howard Martin. He is the key official spokesperson for HeartMath, has been for some time, 22 years, I believe. And strangely, in our 19 and a half years of existence thus far, I've yet to talk to him, so I'm very much looking forward to this. He's the co-author of the highly acclaimed book, The HeartMath Solution, and their new book, Heart Intelligence, Connecting with the Intuitive Guidance of the Heart. We're going to find out about the science behind heart math and how it makes us have a heart-connected world, and this seems about the perfect time to be having this conversation. Howard Martin, welcome back, or welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, Nicole. Good to hear your voice. Yeah, glad we get to finally connect after all these years. I'm looking forward to our conversation. I want to welcome everyone who's listening to this conversation, wherever you are around the world, and hope that you gain something of value from it.
2 decades. My goodness. And here we are finally. So I know, I've heard references to the work and have a very superficial knowledge of it, but let's start at the beginning of where it started for HeartMath.
HeartMath was started by a man named Doc Childry. Doc's still around. He's the chairman of all the HeartMath organizations. But I met Doc when I was 21 years old, and we've known each other now well over 40 years. Both young men just interested in how we were going to change ourselves and the personal growth and consciousness. That was the motivation in the beginning. Doc was just a man who dedicated his life to figuring out how to care for others. He could see into the future and understood, a lot about the changes that were coming. I don't mean like a crystal ball kind of a see into the future, but he had a sense of, what was going to happen and the needs the world was going to have. And he just had a deep heart's desire to create a system that people could use to help navigate through these changing times. Doc, myself, and others. Go ahead.
Sorry, what was his background? Like, did he have a business background, science background? Like, he coming from?
He was he didn't have any of that. Doc was one of those children that was too smart for school. He didn't do well at all. He ended up joining the Army when he was very young. He went through that and he came back out, and then he just, started working odd jobs and finding ways to put things together. He didn't really have a formal educational background. He just had a different kind of awareness and consciousness about him.
Interesting.
So we worked in obscurity, myself, Doc, and others. We didn't have any ambition to be an organization of any kind. We never even thought about that, much less authors or speakers. That was not just in our view. But what we did for 15 years in obscurity is we did everything we could to grow and expand ourselves. And along the way, that became a very heart-centric approach. I mean, we read all the books. You could see all the glowing references about heart. It had been written for thousands of years. We wondered if there was anything to it or not. We weren't touchy, squishy kind of guys. But we decided to dig in and approach life by going through the values of the heart. And what we found was we had this magnificent intelligence that could and did lift us beyond the chaos and confusion and provide us with an intuitive guidance, really, that allowed us to manage our emotions better and navigate, our own lives.
How did you come across that inkling?
Well, I think it was just practice. I think it was just looking at, how do you improve and how do you relate to other people better? How are you going to, make a decision about something? I mean, it's just going through life but approaching it with more love, more care, more understanding, more patience, more tolerance, the qualities associated with heart. And, of course, we had all kinds of spiritual practices back then. We'd read the books and practice what was in them, and lots of meditation and diet and exercise and disciplines. All that was part of our process. But after a while, it kind of led us to uncharted water for ourselves, at least. And that's what we were exploring, is consciousness from the heart. After 15 years of that, without any ambition to ever be an organization or be anybody in particular, we along the way, of course, met people, and there was a point in time when an organization in California that we had met that we respected wanted us to merge with them, and we started HeartMath that way back in 1991. We started with nothing. We didn't have a business plan. We had some existing businesses that were in place, but it was basically a leap of faith to start an organization and do what we can to put together a system that can be shared. So we started out then back in 1991 as a nonprofit. One of the first things we began to see about putting a heart-centric system into the world is that it needed to be done differently. Again, the heart had been talked about for thousands of years and was respected and was honored, but wasn't necessarily being manifested in daily life. So we recognized we needed to build a bridge between the philosophical and spiritual understanding of heart and the practical daily application of living from the heart. And we chose science to be that bridge. So a lot's happened in the last 26 years. Too much to talk about in our show today, Nicole, but certainly HeartMath has grown into a big little organization. We have a huge footprint around the world. Tens of millions of people have been touched in meaningful ways by our work, and it continues to grow and continues to evolve, so I couldn't be happier. And for me, I can't begin to express the appreciation I have for what's happened in my life. I never could have imagined all the wonderful things that I've done and get to do as a result of starting HeartMath with Doc and others. But I think it goes back to an old saying, a simple saying, you know, listening to and following your heart. And that's how I've gone about the whole thing, just doing exactly that.
So give us the nuts and bolts of what it is.
It's a system consisting of tools, techniques, and methods, all underpinned with scientific research. It's a heart-centric approach to performance, health, well-being, and fulfillment. And it was designed, again, to help all of us navigate through these times, these changing times where there's a super amount of high-speed change taking place. So a system of tools, techniques, and methods underpinned with scientific research. And it consists of training programs and technology and lots of ways in which we put that out to the world.
So connect the dots for us with more detail. Like what is the concept behind it? Like how does it actually work?
Well, let's take it from the scientific standpoint, if we could. Again, people know about the values of the heart, Nicole. They talk about love. They talk about compassion. They talk about, you know, many of the aspects or emotional qualities associated with heart. But we needed to make it grounded, and so we wanted to look at the physical heart and see if the physical heart was doing more than pumping blood. We'd had our own experiences. We felt that it was, but there was no real scientific evidence that we knew of that linked physical heart to the emotional and spiritual qualities of heart. So early on, we began to do scientific research, and what we found was is there was research scattered all through the research literature all around the world showing that the heart was doing a lot more than pumping blood. Our scientists, along with other researchers, universities, et cetera, began to put together a story that really recast even the role of the physical heart. And what we found was is that the heart is actually an information processing center in the body, sending important commands to the brain and throughout the rest of the system. And it does it in four ways, and at some point I'll be glad to describe those four ways. But it communicates with us. It's sending information, and we also believe it's receiving information at a physiological level. And so what that did is it really grounded out this understanding of heart. Now we had the physical heart performing tasks that we didn't realize it was performing that related to the emotional, spiritual, and intuitive qualities long associated with heart. So science, again, was the bridge. So through training programs, where we have very simple but practical techniques, we began to do training, and we started training individuals first, these self-empowerment type workshops. That went into organizational work and corporations, healthcare systems, government agencies, and it all expanded from there. The research was a key component for us. It led to lots and lots of positive media and attracted a lot of people to us. And so really the practice of the techniques and, you know, the understanding of the scientific basis behind them is part of what we offer. The other thing that happened, Nicole, along the way is we began to look at how you decode the information going from heart to brain and the rest of the body. And you do that by looking at changes in heart rhythm, not just heart rate, which is like what a fitness monitor would measure, but you're looking at the timing changes that are taking place between each and every heartbeat. There's a medical term for that type of analysis called heart rate variability analysis. So we began to use heart rate variability analysis to begin to decode the communications between heart, brain, and the rest of the body. And that led us to the development of technology. Today it's called the Inner Balance Trainer. And it's a technology that allows people to learn how to better regulate their heart rhythms and to go from the chaotic rhythms to the more coherent ones. And that changes everything, changes brain function, changes hormonal releases, immune system response, opens us up for more of our own intelligence capacity. A lot happens when we do that. So we had technology added into everything that we offer to the world as well. So the whole system is a complete system. I guess it just simply said, Nicole, it just gives us the ability to live more from the qualities of the heart more consistently. And there's a lot of benefit to that, especially now.
What are the benefits?
I think the benefits are certainly we have a greater ability to discriminate decision. We can see into things differently. We get a wider angle view on decisions, whether they be big or small. I think one of the main benefits that comes from that is actually the ability to self-regulate our own emotions. I mean, most people think emotions are just reactions. You know, there's an event that takes place and you have an emotional reaction to it. And while it is definitely true that every perception has an emotion associated with it, what often gets missed is our ability to make emotional choices. The ability to choose the emotional state that we feel is best. So what that gives us is a unique capacity to live life differently. In other words, we can have an emotional trigger. We can get upset about something. Anger, frustration happens. It's part of life. But we can learn to shorten the time that those type of emotions are prevalent and learn to make inner shifts quicker that allow us to move back to more balanced emotional states. With all the high-speed changes happening, that's an essential skill, not just important, but essential right now for how we need to live if we want to live meaningful, fulfilling lives. There's also the physical benefits. Certainly, a lot of our research and a lot of our work with health professionals and hospitals around the world have shown that when you begin to activate more of the emotional qualities associated with heart, there's health benefits. Immune system responses can improve. Hormonal balance certainly can improve. We've seen big improvements in medical conditions like arrhythmia, which is the irregular beating pattern of the heart, a long list of physiological health benefits. And then there are the psychological benefits. We work with lots and lots of mental health professionals. I think about 40,000 now use HeartMath in some way. And they're seeing great results with people who are suffering from things like anxiety and depression. Now, certainly, HeartMath is not designed to replace anything like therapy or psychological processes that are needed, but it's been added into so many of the psychological processes along with our technology to assist people through some of the things that they're going through right now. So those are some of the benefits that come from really activating the heart's intelligence and then living a life more from that perspective.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
So when someone is coming to, quote, do HeartMath, what do they actually do?
Well, there are training programs you can take. Most of those are not for the public. They are certification programs. In other words, if you want to be certified in HeartMath, you can become a HeartMath coach. And if you want to do workshops, you can become a HeartMath trainer. If you want to be if you're a health professional and want to add HeartMath into what you do, there's a program for that, HeartMath Interventions Program. And then there are workshops and events that take place around the world. I speak a lot of places, and people come to live events, so they do that. Certainly, our books and our technology are purchased by lots of people, and they learn through the books and they learn to use the technology. So what they do is they learn techniques like any other system. You know, there's a technique for decision making.
But what I meant was, if I was coming to a coach for a session, what happens in a session?
Well, that would be particular to the coach, of course, and how the coach relates to a client. But what the coach eventually would probably do after determining what you needed is that he or she would begin to teach you simple techniques that would allow you to gain a greater degree of your emotional balance and also open up more of your perceptual capacity for decision-making, like intuition, things like that. So they take you through a process of tools and techniques is what would happen.
So I guess what I'm asking is, how exactly does it work?
How exactly does it work? Well, I guess there's lots of ways to describe that. Let's take it from the physiological. As you use the techniques, what happens is you begin to send different information going back from the heart to the brain and to the rest of the body. For example, you begin to send different signals coming from the nervous system that exists in the heart back up into the brain, and that changes the brain function, how the brain is operating. That's one example of what happens when you use the technique. It balances out something called your autonomic nervous system, provides synchronization in that system. When that happens, it releases regenerative hormones into your body, so there's a lift at the physical level. I think, as I alluded to a minute ago, what's most important is, you know, how does it exactly work? Well, over time, you begin to create new emotional habits. It's easier for us to feel appreciative or caring versus feeling angry, upset, and frustrated. All that begins to happen with regular practice of the techniques, and you could explain it physiologically, but I think it's beyond that, really. I think it's opening us up to another aspect of our own selves, our own humanity, our own intelligence. A generic word for that would be spirit. More of our own spirit begins to download into our humanness, and we begin to operate very differently. So those are just examples of how it works, but it's really accessing a field of information that's beyond our logical linear field of information. There's a physiological correlate to that in terms of what's happening inside the body, and as a result, we can change. We can improve. We can meet our challenges with more poise, dignity, and grace.
So what kinds of results are people seeing after using HeartMath?
Well, there are a lot. You know, for example, we can look at, say, organizational training. We've done a lot of social science research as well, Nicole, looking at what kind of behavioral changes occur in people practicing HeartMath after going through training programs. And we've done that in some large-scale studies with multinational corporations, for example. We did one with five different multinational corporations, both in the United States and Europe. And it was a long-term study. They were trained in, all the people were trained in a HeartMath training program, and they were taking psychometric surveys. What we saw was big changes in things like their feelings of sadness and depression, improvements in their feelings of positive outlook. We saw decreases in people wanting to leave their job. These are all statistically significant measurements that were happening. So a lot of behavioral changes were occurring that were impacting the organization. We also tracked, in some cases through those studies, healthcare costs, for example, and seeing healthcare costs go down in employees who had been trained in HeartMath. Those are some of the organizational benefits. Some others were related to, well, I'll tell you one story. This is one we sort of backed into. We didn't really have this figured out up front, but we trained some trainers in a hospital in Chicago. That hospital was ranked very low in their market. All their rankings and measurements of the hospital were really low. And one of the problems they had was turnover. They had 27% of their staff was leaving every year. It was costing them millions of dollars in training and replacing people, as well as the quality of healthcare in the hospital. After 1 year, we got a letter from their CFO, Chief Financial Officer, saying, "We're going to share some results with you." What happened was is that after 1 year of a portion of the hospital being trained, their turnover numbers went from 27% down to 20%. So 7% improvement in people leaving the hospital. Their patient satisfaction numbers really jumped. Ultimately, they ended up number one in their market, and they attributed, you know, millions of dollars in savings to their staff going through HeartMath training. So that's just an example of an organizational benefit. What results have we seen? The stories go on. We've trained everything from Olympic athletes to lots of different people, whether it's healthcare or business or government. And what we generally see, Nicole, is just improvements in areas in life to where performance is involved and where relationships are involved. That's another area we've seen big improvements in, is people and their relationships. Just sort of how humans relate to one another. All that gets better. And as a result of that, there is an outpicturing of that. Things can change in an organization or change in a family.
So you alluded to current times briefly earlier as we were speaking, and how it is critical that we be functioning on a different level right now. Can you speak more to that?
Yeah, I'd be glad to, really. I think, Nicole, what we're going through right now is unprecedented. I don't think ever before in the history of humankind have we been going through as much change in a short amount of time as we are now. And the way that I sometimes characterize what's happening is that we're going through a dimensional shift in consciousness. In this context, when I use the term dimension, I'm not talking about a physical dimension. I'm talking about the ranges of parameters in which we operate and think and feel and create our reality. And we've been in a third-dimensional baseline reality for a long time. And that's not bad. Everything is okay. But it's a reality ruled by, duality, separation, good, bad, right, and wrong, nationalities, all these different things. And it's a dimension that's produced a lot of magnificent things in the world. The world we have today is a result of that, and it's certainly a wonderful world. But it's also, of course, created a lot of problems. So we're making a major shift in dimensional jump now, moving from the third dimension all the way to the upper ranges of the fourth dimension. And that's a huge shift. Never before has that happened. And so when that much change is happening, it creates both chaos and order and coherence. It's hard. People have a hard time with change. You know, it's hard to adapt to so much change. So as a result of that, there's a couple things going on. One is that people are suffering. People are going through more challenges than they ever imagined. The world itself is under a lot of stress and strain. And all that's real, and that's what we see every day on the news. At the same time, there's an amazing consciousness movement unfolding as well. We are changing. We are evolving. We are developing new capacities as human beings. We are developing the ability to come up with solutions to challenges that often seem like there are no solutions. We are coming together more as people. There's a spirit in the air of cooperation instead of competition. There are movements happening all over the world. There are shows like this one, like yours, that are spreading new information, that are bringing people together, that are offering new insights that we all draw from. And as a result of that, we are co-creating a new reality. It's going to be a time period for a while, I believe, where we've still got a lot of challenges to face. But, Nicole, my true feeling is that we are moving into something new and different that we've never seen before, and that although it looks dire at times, that we're headed in the right direction. So if we're in the middle of all this, as I said, we're going to need tools. We can't just approach life the same way we always approached it and try to solve problems in the same way in which we solved them before. It's all changing too fast. We have to have a new capacity in order to do this and have it be as smooth and kind of process as it can be.
Mm-hmm. So how can HeartMath help with that?
Well, that's what it's designed for. That's why we did it in the first place. We could have done a lot of different things with our lives, but we decided a long time ago that we had a genuine care for people, that we really wanted people to have the ability to go through the changes that were happening and that we knew were going to continue to increase and not have it be such a harsh process. We also have to allow for life to be life and for people to have their own sort of blueprints in life that they need to deal with. But we wanted to do what we could, not to be the only thing or the big thing. It was never based on that kind of ambition. But we wanted to give people the ability to access something that we knew they had inside themselves. It's called heart. We've talked about that. Core of their authentic self, the place they go inside where they do find self-security, part of themselves that they access that can move them beyond the challenges to allow people to be able to do things that they sometimes thought they couldn't, and to give us a new direction. And that's what the system was about all along, is just to put something into the world that we felt could help in the name of service, in the name of care. And again, recognizing there's lots and lots of wonderful processes and organizations and people out there doing great things. We just wanted to be contributors, that's all.
What's the most important takeaway for people listening right now that are going through challenging times?
Well, I think there's a couple, if I may, Nicole. One is, first of all, don't feel alone. Never feel alone. We're in an interesting, challenging time right now, and many people are going through various things. And so don't feel like it's just you, and certainly don't feel like it's because you did anything wrong. I think one of the most important qualities that we need right now, that all of us need, me included, is more self-compassion. Give yourself the gift of compassion. You don't have to feel guilty about that at all. It's like recognize that you're a good person, doing the very best you can, that you are learning, you are growing. It is an interesting and challenging time to be on the planet, but also one of great opportunity. There are going to be times for each and every one of us when we don't necessarily feel like we met our expectations. There's going to be times when we feel down and we feel down about ourselves. It's in those moments that I would suggest that people go to their own best friend, which is their heart, and have a casual, gentle conversation and give yourself the gift of compassion. Be compassionate with yourself. Allow yourself to go through what you need to go through, and don't be so down on yourself about it. That would be a takeaway for sure that I would suggest that people go away with. Is recognize you're not alone and recognize that self-compassion is one of the things that I think we all could use more of right now.
What about the levels of fear going on?
Wow, that's a big subject, isn't it? You know, it's interesting. I did a telecourse last week on that subject, on the changes that are going on and how to navigate change. And I talked about fear some in that. And, you know, I was at the end of the call, at the last 15 minutes of that class, I opened it up for the questions. And I knew people were going through a lot of fear and a lot of insecurity. But even with my knowingness of that, Nicole, it was more than I thought when the questions and comments came back. People are afraid. They're very much afraid of the changes that are occurring. The political situation in the United States, for one thing, would be creating a lot of fear. And I had like a woman that came on, and she said to me, I'm really frightened. I'm so frightened. I'm not frightened for myself. I'm frightened for my daughter. She's 7 years old, and I don't know what kind of world she's living in or what she's going to be living in. So these touching, fearful comments came out. So the way I would look at fear is this. It's like, if you're feeling fearful, just look at, you can begin to reduce the intensity of that and take it step by step. It isn't that we can just eliminate our fears, but we can make them easier to get our arms around and deal with.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
You can do that by trying to take some of the emotional charge and energy down a notch or two as you go when fear comes up. There's a term, that a little phrase, sometimes people like little mantra-type phrases, and there's one that can be very effective for that, and it's this, Nicole. Take the significance out. So when something comes up and it causes this big rise in fear, just try to say, take the significance out. And just, you're not ignoring it. You're not disavowing that it exists, but you're just reducing the intensity of the fearful response on, so that you can better manage it, better make peace with things. And again, get your arms around it a little bit. That's one thing. Another aspect of this of fear is to look at what we are digesting through the media and ask yourself a question, you know, from your heart, does that need to be looked at differently or managed differently? And so we can stay exposed to the news, the constant barrage of news information, including social media. And I think it's important to stay in touch with what's happening, but it can be absorptive. We can become so absorbed in all of that. And then we end up in the story. We end up in the drama. We end up in watching every little nuance that's going on and reacting to every single one. And over time, that begins to drain us. And when our emotional, especially emotional energy, gets drained some, then the perceptions begin to look like they're on the downside. We start seeing life through these downsided views. And that leads to the spiraling down and eventually to fear. You know, so one of the things to try to do is to try to look at how you're absorbing information from the media. And I'll give one example of how I do it. I feel like I want to and need to stay in touch with what's happening in the world. And so, yeah, I look at CNN website. I look at it, you know, every day. It's up on my computer in the morning. What I've learned to do is to look at the headlines and have my response to that, but I try not to read every single story. I don't dig down into the stories to really get into the drama of it all. I take a look at it, and I try to step back from it, and rather than looking at it in a, through a very judgmental lens, I try to just send more love and care and compassion towards whatever it is that I see that's a bit disconcerting. So I'm learning to be better at that. It's a skill that I think I need to improve in, and it's learning to be more truly compassionate rather than sympathetic and empathetic. It's learning to be more caring but not be let that care drag me down into worry and over-concern. And all those inner balance moves, those little pivots that we make inside, allow us to accumulate more emotional resolve, and that can lead to a greater ability to reduce fear.
I like that approach because that's the, you know, people are still trying to go avoid it, and then you can't avoid it anymore. And like you said, it just creeps into your Facebook page and everywhere else, right? So we've got to have
it all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're getting barraged, aren't we? You know, by everything.
Yeah.
It's like most of it's not good news. And I think that there's a different world going on too. That it gets exposed some, but our tendency as human beings, for some reason, is to focus on the negative. And I think that so much of that's there to focus on that it can create a problem for us in how we see things, you know, and I think there's something else wonderful and magical that's emerging as well.
Yes, well, we're seeing unity out of this chaos already, and, you know, I think there's going to be a lot more challenges coming up, so best to have the tools ready. But it's been really great connecting with you and you know, connecting with HeartMath. I'm looking forward to reading more about it as well and finding more about it.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
You are listening to for the News for the Soul Radio Network.
Time to go live again. I'm Nicole Marie Whitney, News for the Soul Radio, life-changing talk radio. From the uplifting to the unexplained, and over the many years that we've been around, we have talked to one very special scientist and author, Dr. Bruce Lipton, is with me here for the next hour here today on News for the Soul.
Thank you so very much. I'm so happy to be back on the show, and I'm so happy to be able to talk to the wonderful audience, because there are my cultural creatives, the ones that are helping create a new civilization, and I so appreciate them.
You said something that obviously needs to be highlighted and underscored. So we have to get out of this survival victim programming now to avoid a collapse of humanity in about 20 years. Is that what I heard you say?
Absolutely. Half the wildlife that was on this planet in 1970 doesn't exist anymore. We lost half the animals on this planet since 1970.
Half?
Half. It's actually 52%. How about this? No saltwater fish in the ocean in 2048. Listen, tell your grandchildren there used to be fish in the ocean. Yeah, all of this. Why? It turns out human behavior. We're undermining ecosystems. We're pillaging the planet. We're taking all the resources and polluting and destroying. And we think like, oh, we have no effect on it. It's like, no, we are causing, and this is a fact of science. So here, I'm going to say this is a fact of science. And that is this. We are into what is called the sixth mass extinction of life on this planet. Five times in the history of this planet, life was thriving. And then some catastrophic thing happened, and 50 to 80% of all the wildlife on the planet disappeared, just, you know, gone. And they attribute things like maybe asteroids hitting or comets hitting the Earth and upsetting the environment, or massive geological activity, volcanoes, earthquakes, and stuff like that. And they say when we're looking at the loss of species today, it is greater and faster than the loss of species in the previous mass extinction. And we're at a level now where it's now mass extinction approaching, because the organisms are getting lost. As I said, 52% of the animals are gone. And so all of a sudden it really says is that we are in a process called the sixth mass extinction of life. And yet science, as I said, knows what the cause is. It's human behavior. You cannot continue the way you have been doing things, because it won't work that way anymore. You hit a wall. You must change. And so when you look at the world and you see all those bad headlines and everybody going, oh my God, it's so scary. And I go, no, you don't get it. This is good news. It's good news for the reason is this. The system has to break down to build a new system. We can't fix this old one, because that's the one that caused the problems. The more you try and fix it, the more you keep the problems going. So while people are looking in fear, I really want to say, wait a minute. You're focusing your efforts and energy on the wrong side. You should be focusing your efforts and energy on the side of where's the change? Where do we go from here? When you look at it, if you look at it in fear, as I say, this is remember, the picture in your mind makes your health. Part of the illnesses of this planet is to be in fear of these changes, because the picture of fear means threat. And the threat changes the chemistry of your body into protection, and that will actually shut down your growth and your immune system. And in fact, that's one of the biggest causes of problems on today's world, the fear. So if you look at the crises as fear, you're not helping yourself or the planet. If you think about it, I look at the crises as good. There are other ways to solve this thing. There's another way to do life better than this thing. When you look at the world and you see all the upheaval, it's, yeah, because we're in a transition state from an old type of civilization, the one we were in, scientific materialism based on matter, and moving into a more holistic civilization where energy, which includes spirit, is brought back into the equation. So we're moving into a new civilization right now. So my message is, okay, we can change our way, look at the world, start to recognize that what do you want from life versus what the program said you would be. And this is a time of great flux and change, an opportunity to rewrite the programs, create the new world, and move out of this collapsing one into a civilization that we can thrive into. That's what's in front of us. We have been taught to believe we are victims, victims of our heredity, and that when you're a victim, you give up responsibility because you have no control anyway, and also that you give up your savings to anybody who says they're going to help you with your problem.
Which is huge, of course, why you're you and what you're doing. The perceptions, are they as easy to change as you're suggesting?
Yes, when you have knowledge of how to change them. If you don't have an understanding, then it's one of the more difficult processes in our lives. So it turns out 95% of the day we're thinking, so 95% of the day we're playing subconscious programs. Yes, they came from other people, so they're not our beliefs and wishes and desires. And we're manifesting 95% of the day a life that we've been programmed to. This is why we're so moving toward an evolutionary upheaval, and it's an evolution upheaval, not in biology, not in genetics, but in consciousness. It's a necessity for us in this stage of our evolution. We're facing some very serious civilization problems right now, and we have to empower ourselves. And as we talked about, there's two levels of empowerment right now. Number one, epigenetics is, yeah, you're in control of this, and if you understand it, you can manifest it. And B, that collectively our behavior as a culture is undermining civilization, that we're going extinct, and it's not 1,000 years from now. You know, they're talking about like civilization collapsing within 20 years. This is reality, and the reason why is our behavior, human behavior, is undermining the web of life and humanity itself. And so we're in need of what? A rapid makeover, a rapid redo, a rapid change this program, and get out of the belief that life is a struggle for survival, and get out of this belief that you're a victim of your biology, and re-empower yourselves. And then when we do that, it'll change the world. We can get out of the program. We can create new programs, and using the subliminal tapes, using the repetition habit thing, or using energy psychology. These are all ways that you can rewrite any of the programs in your life that you got in the first 7 years. Our lives are, by definition, 95% coming from the subconscious. So by definition, your life is essentially a printout of your subconscious programs. And all of a sudden it says, oh my goodness, then we are masters of our biology. We're not victims of anything. The only thing we're victims of is the belief that we're victims. That's wrong. So this is an exciting time, a revolution on the planet, especially when you consider the healthcare crisis, the money, the amount of money that we're spending to bring people to health through a model that says, oh, it's just a broken genes and broken body, and give them some chemistry and they'll come back, and then find out it had nothing to do with that except for 1%. But it had to do with our lifestyle, our beliefs, our spirituality, our attitudes about life, love, diet, and exercise. There you go.
Holy smokes, the time has just zipped by us. That's a perfect pause moment, though, isn't it? heaven on earth. That's a lot better than destruction of total humanity.
And, yeah, it's a good destination, and joy will be there, and happiness, and love, and community sharing. I see it because I've been around the world, and I've seen people moving in that direction, and been in communities where things like that are going on. It's like, oh my God, sometimes we think this is never going to happen. And what we don't realize, Nicole, is that there are so many groups out there, so many shows such as your own providing this new information, and we don't see the other ones, and therefore we look and say, yeah, I guess we're the only ones here, and it turns out, no, we have large numbers of us all over the planet, but they're not connected yet. But in one, you know, it could be overnight, just like a Berlin Wall. Boom, they all decide to connect, and the world will change the next day, just like what happened in the Berlin Wall coming down.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
And this is someone that I have followed the work of for many, many years and have a great respect for. He is an author, lecturer, philanthropist, very well known around the world, has taught seminars and work regarding mind power, which is one of his international bestsellers, Mind Power into the 21st Century. There's also Money, Success, and You, which I think lived in my briefcase for about 2.5 years daily at one point, and The Practice of Happiness. And his new book, which I hope we're going to talk about, is Mind Power for Children. John Kehoe, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
Well, I'm on a small little lake in northern Ontario, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and the moon's out, and got a bonfire happening, and so things are pretty mellow.
Sounds pretty nice. Now, you've just started your media tour for your book, is that right? And how is it going?
It's going good.
Well, as a mom, when I heard that Mind Power for Children was hitting the shelves, as you know, I was pretty excited. And but just before we start talking about it, let's for the listeners that aren't familiar with the concept of mind power, let's start with that. What is mind power?
Well, it's very simply understanding that your thoughts influence what happens to you. And what you think, what you believe, your expectations, the energy and vibration that you work with each and every day interacts with the universe and with your life. And so mind powers is giving an individual techniques and methods so that they can begin to direct their thoughts and have good things happen to them.
So this is coming from a place of being completely thinking that we just kind of get thrown about and things happen to us in our life, to realizing that we're interacting in some way?
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people have that attitude that, you know, life just happens and I don't really have control over what happens. And we don't have control 100%, but we certainly can influence what happens to us. And any time that there are patterns, especially in your life, I always feel that that is an indication of some subconscious vibration that's happening within you. So while in any given situation you can't say 100% that yes, you did cause it or you had some influence in it, but when you start seeing patterns, either good or bad, in your life, whether it be with money, whether it be in relationships, health, any area of your life, then you are in very good footing to start thinking about what is it within me that is attracting this. And I've worked with it for 25 years. It's certainly not a concept to me anymore. It's a living reality. I practice it, I teach it, and I believe in it absolutely because I've seen it work, not just in my life, but with thousands of other people. So it's there for anybody to practice. It's not for everybody. It's not the answer of the universe. It's not the key to everything, but it is a very wonderful tool for those individuals that find themselves attracted to it.
It seems to me, from the people that we interview and interact with, that this is a growing wave of awareness and at a phenomenal pace, where people are becoming more aware that they are having some kind of interaction and do have some input as to what's going on as far as being able to control their, well, awareness or focus.
Well, you know, I used to think that, and I don't know where I stand right now. Certainly consciousness is shifting, and people are becoming more aware. But at the same time, I really find that there's a lot of fix me immediately, you know, like, hey, I tried it for a week and it doesn't work. Hey, let's go do this new workshop because the one that I did last month, I'm coming down from it and I'm not quite as high as I was. And people are always looking for quick fixes. and quick answers. And there doesn't seem to be as much of the warrior spirit where people are willing to commit to a discipline and work with it. So I'm of two minds, of the one that, yes, consciousness is shifting and we're all becoming more aware. But at the same time, I think a lot of us are becoming really lazy and wanting the big bang to happen.
And this really is an ongoing discipline. It's sort of a way of being, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a matter of taking things one day at a time and really enjoying one's life. Your life is what it's all about. And any system that you have or any method that allows you to enjoy it, to have fun with it, to have good things happen to you, then is a very valuable system. Whether it is yoga, whether it is religion, whether it is mind power, I mean, it doesn't really matter what your system is, as long as it's working for you.
So in a nutshell, what is the mind power system?
Well, the mind power system, there are a number of techniques. I wrote a book called Mind Power into the 21st Century, which was a big international bestseller, and it has a lot of different methods, such as visualization and affirmations and creating new beliefs. And it's taking responsibility for your consciousness and taking responsibility for your beliefs and your model of reality. We all form models of reality, and we are the lens through which we view the world. And so taking responsibility for that and deciding to set aside a certain amount of time each day, whether it be 5 minutes or whether it be 20 minutes, but this amount of time is the time that you do mind power exercises, and you look at it as a discipline, as a yoga, and you do it daily, and anybody that does it daily consistently for months at a time will see an absolute astounding change within their vibration.
The mind power aspect, now how do we apply this to children?
Children have thoughts too, and the same concept that works for adults works for children.
Quick example, eliminating some negatives. I mean, kids say not nice things to other kids, and so they've got this negative thought. What are some techniques?
Well, there's a bunch of different ways that you can do dealing with negative. Recognizing, first of all, that they are only thoughts in the sense of they only have as much power as you choose to give to them. All the energy and power of a negative thought is what we give to it. So if we tend to react against it, then it can make it into something very bigger. So you can teach them such things as the opposite thought method. And in the opposite thought method, what it is that whatever that negative thought is, you change it into the exact opposite. So if the thought comes to you, I'm going to fail a test, then you turn it into the exact opposite. I'm going to pass the test. If the thought comes to you that I will never make another good friend again because my best friend moved out of the city, you change the thought into the exact opposite. I'm going to make another good friend. And so you can teach them things like the opposite thought method. You can teach them things like affirmations to affirm whatever it is that they want. You can teach the cannonball method, which is to put the negative into a cannon and imagine it being shot out into the ocean and dropping away and to be lost forever. And there's all kinds of little methods and techniques that you can pass on to kids so that they don't have to suffer with every passing negative thought. And introduce the concept of the mind being like a garden, and you are the intelligent cultivator of the garden, and you weed out all the wrong, useless, negative thoughts, and you insert good, positive thoughts that you want to see grow and develop in your mind.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Today we're here talking to John Kehoe, international bestseller of Mind Power into the 21st Century, several other great books.
Is that I find that the real magic time is somewhere between 60 and 90 days. If you do something or visualize or imprint something for 60 to 90 days, that seems to be sufficient enough to make a very powerful imprint on the subconscious. Now, having said that, sometimes things can imprint almost instantly, like in one go, especially if